Hello, everyone, and happy March 11th, the first day of daylight savings time, so it's nice and bright outside, even though it's 5 p.m. Just 45 minutes before I came downstairs, somebody walked through my door that I wasn't expecting to see. Her name is Jasmine. Jasmine's here. She decided to show up and surprise us. We were expecting to see her on Wednesday. We are going to go to Estes Park and have a long weekend together. And she was going to spend the first part of the week just kind of chilling out in her apartment. But she decided to come here instead, so that's fun. Yeah. So we are here for the Seven Steps to Awakening. And I am going to, I see Jay says he went to Estes Park every summer growing up. Yeah, that's fun. I am going to play a song to get us started. And Jamie's going to sing along. And the song that I picked out is by Audrey Assad. It's called Ought to Be. Hold on, Jamie. I'll come see what's up. Hold on.
I love you more than a snow falling silver rain, more than a silence that only the snow leaves behind. I love you more. And I love you better than the gray of the autumn air, better than spring in its
I love that song. Love planted deeply becomes what it ought to be. You know, it may not be as big as an old oak tree yet, but love planted deeply becomes what it ought to be. I think that's a very, very encouraging song. Interestingly, it's from Audrey's album called The House You Are Building. You know, because I think maybe many of us get the feeling every now and then that my desire for truth is not what it ought to be. right? Hold on, I'm going to close the door. TV upstairs just got loud. So maybe we get the feeling sometimes that our desire for truth or our desire for awakening is not what it ought to be. But I love the idea in this song that love planted deeply will become what it ought to be, right? Isn't that a gorgeous, gorgeous, encouraging song? And so really our purpose then, instead of condemning ourselves, is to just keep taking steps in that direction. You know, just keep doing our current best. And as we do our best, you know the old saying, our best gets better. It happens naturally. Yeah, instead of doubting. So love planted deeply becomes what it ought to be. Right? Great song. All right, so 7 steps to awakening tonight. We are beginning with quote 808. This is Nisargadatta Maharaj in step 4. This quote's a little longer than some of the other Nisargadatta quotes, so I'll read it a few times. Here we go. The greatest guru is your inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal, and he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. But again, you must have the strong desire to find him and do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. And do not waste energy and time on regrets. Learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. I'll read that again. Nisargadatta Maharaj. The greatest guru is your inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal, and he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. But again, you must have the strong desire to find him and do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. And do not waste energy and time on regrets. Learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. So what this quote reminds me of, when I first moved to Pueblo, probably the first 3 years that I was here, 2009, 2010, and 2011. And really, I was only here the last quarter of 2009. So we're talking 2.25 years. So for 2.25 years, our house was kind of an open guest house. We had guests coming and going all of the time. In fact, the very week that we moved in, our first guests arrived. And it stayed that way all the way until Jay and I went to India. That's when it stopped. Jay, because when we were in India, that's when I received the guidance for increased silence. And I came back and I told people, that's the end. You know, no more. I need increased silence. But for 2.25 years, you know, it was they were just, you know, rotating people. I mean, we had people here pretty much all of the time. Very seldom did we have a period of time when there was no guest here. And, of course, Jasmine and Danielle were here with me the entire time. And it became a bit of a joke. Sad to say this, but unfortunately it's true. It became a bit of a joke with Jasmine and Danielle. I'm feeling guided to ... And the reason it was a joke is because our guests, many of our guests, I won't say all of them, but many of our guests would just use that I'm feeling guided to dot, 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 and follow it with obviously just whatever they were thinking, whatever they wanted to do, whatever opinion they wanted to have. And it really was obvious that they weren't going in and looking for genuine guidance. And again, Jasmine was just a child then. You know, she was in middle school, and it was even obvious to her. And so it just became a joke. I'm feeling guided to eat pizza tonight. You know, I'm feeling guided to whatever. And so one of the things that Nisargadatta talks about in this particular quote, you know, he talks about the inner guru as the greatest guru. And I got to tell you, I feel strongly that's true. The reason I feel strongly that's true is because unless you happen to be married to your spiritual teacher, that outer physical spiritual teacher is not with you all of the time. Right? I don't know how much contact you might have with your spiritual teacher, but for most of us, the vast majority of our hours, our spiritual teacher is not hitched at the hip to us. We are, in effect, on our own. And so the outer spiritual teacher just can't provide the moment-to-moment guidance that the inner spiritual teacher can provide, the inner guru, the inner teacher, inner spiritual wisdom. That's something that's always there. And if we really learn how to recognize it and rely on it, it can guide us in every moment of every day, which is something that the outer teacher just can't do because of the physical difference, right? Because he or she is not always there. So it makes sense that the inner guru or the inner teacher or inner spiritual wisdom would be the best teacher for each and every one of us. But the problem lies in if we're not genuinely seeking the true inner teacher and instead just doing what some of my guests did, which is just saying my guidance is and going with our ego. There has to be a sincerity about seeking that true inner guidance that is not my ego. There has to be a sincerity about seeking that true inner guidance that is not my ego. There has to be a sincerity about wanting to abandon the false self. There has to be a sincerity about wanting to abandon the false self. I mean, my guests who would say, I'm feeling guided to dot, dot, dot. The reason they were doing that is because they didn't have a sincerity in wanting to abandon the false self. You see, they wanted to follow the false self, but call it guidance. They wanted what they wanted, right? They had no desire to abandon the false self. So the moral of the story is, we can fool ourselves when it comes to false guidance, when it comes to inner guidance, sorry. Our inner guidance can be false guidance, is what I mean to say. We can fool ourselves when it comes to inner guidance. That's so important to know. We can fool ourselves. But, you know, we can fool ourselves when it comes to outer teachers, too. There are plenty of outer teachers out there who simply are not genuine. And if our desire is not genuine, we could be attracted to one of those teachers. You know, maybe we feel special being in that particular spiritual group, right? Being close to that particular quote, enlightened one. So I think when it comes right down to it, it's not that an outer guru is better than an inner guru or an inner guru is better than an outer guru. It's a matter that genuine sincerity of purpose is what's required for either an outer guru or an inner guru to be genuine and helpful. You know, if I don't have a genuine inner purpose to let go of the false self, I'm going to be very specific here. It has to be a genuine inner purpose to let go of the false self, to abandon the false self fully. And if that's not my purpose, then neither outer guru nor inner guru is going to be genuine. But if my purpose is genuine, I'm not going to put up with an outer guru that's not genuine. And also, through my sincerity, the guidance that comes from within is going to be pointing in the direction that I want to go. Yeah, how can I make sure I get the highest guru? Have the highest intention in yourself, Robert Adams. Right? Now, even with a sincere purpose, based on my limited experience, even with a sincere purpose, when we start accessing the inner guru, it's something that we're not skilled at yet. So when we first start accessing the inner guru, the guidance we get may not be the clearest. It may not be the deepest. It may not even be the purest. But that's, to me, no reason at all to avoid it. Because if we're afraid to try to access inner guidance, because we're afraid that it's not going to be the clearest, not going to be the highest, not going to be the purest, if we aren't even trying, we're never going to get there. Love planted deeply becomes what it ought to be. So we try. We reach, we do our best with our sincerity to get guidance. And then the guidance that comes, assuming there's not something really wrong with it, we trust it. And through the practice of trying and trusting, a refinement naturally happens. Through the practice of trying and trusting. Trying and trusting. A refinement naturally happens. And the guidance that we are able to receive from the inner guru becomes more clear, higher level of teaching, and more pure. Without something mixed in. When I go back and I read my early journals, or when I listen in on Holy Spirit guides, sometimes for me, it makes me a little antsy in my seat. Even when I read in TI, because my way of seeing has obviously matured. Otherwise, none of that would have been worth it, right? And so when I look back at things that I wrote, you know, in 2005, 2006, 2007, you know, I can see the immaturity in it, or the weaknesses in it, or the not completely all there yetness in it. I can see that I was attached to the language of A Course in Miracles. And as a result of that attachment, I can also see where the teaching could have gone deeper if I hadn't been attached to a teaching mentally. I can see where I held myself back by being attached to an outer form of teaching. But of course, eventually that all fell away, especially in 2012 when I took that year of silence and spent all my time with the Seven Steps to Awakening. But the clarity that I have arrived at now, which is really getting taught through the guiding light, my highest teachings are coming through the guiding light right now. So the clarity that I have now, which is still increasing, right? I would not be here if I had not gone through those early stages first. It didn't start with the level of clarity that I receive through the guiding light. And my guess is that for pretty much everybody else, it's the same thing. You know, maybe there's some spiritual prodigies who, boom, you know, get this unbelievable clarity about the nature of reality and the nature of illusion right off the bat. But my guess is probably not. My guess is probably not. That probably that's something that comes as we continue to try and trust. Next Sunday night, our monthly satsang guest is going to be Floyd Henderson. And Floyd Henderson was a student of Nisargadatta Maharaj. And he was a student of Nisargadatta Maharaj, obviously, in his later years. And Floyd says that I do want to say Floyd says, because I really haven't heard this anywhere else. I have no reason to distrust Floyd, but it's not anything that I have independently verified. Floyd says that in the later years, Nisargadatta Maharaj was asking people to stop reading I Am That, because his own clarity had moved on. And you know, he was looking at I Am That saying, well, you know, if you listen to me now instead of reading that, you'll get a better clarity. And so he was asking his students not to read I Am That. Now, I don't know. I asked Floyd where that later clarity was, and I would have to look up the answer again, exact word for word what Floyd said, but basically it's not written down. So here we are. We have I Am That. But it's interesting to note that even Nisargadatta Maharaj, assuming that what Floyd is communicating to me is true, even Nisargadatta Maharaj may have had this continuing evolution of clarity. And so why wouldn't we expect ourselves to start where we start and then through sincerity, trying and trusting to have an evolution of clarity? But of course, if we never start, if we say, I can't do it, yeah, my clarity is nothing like Regina's, or my clarity is nothing like Nisargadatta's. I mean, you know, if we do that, we're not going to get anywhere. So let me read this quote again from Nisargadatta Maharaj. The greatest guru is your inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal, and he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. But again, you must have the strong desire to find him. Right? You must have the strong desire to find him. And do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. To me, that speaks to the sincerity. And do not waste energy and time on regrets. Learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. So why don't we go and look at the journal? The journal entry related to this quote was written on December 1st, 2015. And there are actually several journal entries written on that day related to this quote. The first one is, "What do I see now as I look with the inner guru? I see the yellow brick road, one brick at a time. I know exactly where I need to place my foot now. Do I need to know anything else? No, just this. I only need to know where to place my foot now. And then I need to follow through by placing my foot there along with my heart." So my experience of guidance, and I do not perceive this to be just my experience. I think this is actually a fact when it comes to inner guidance. Is that inner guidance guides in the present. In the present, and typically about the present. Now, I have received guidance before that you could say wasn't about the present. You know, like I did receive guidance to leave my job and move. And, of course, that wasn't about that exact moment, because at that exact moment when that guidance came, I was in the shower. You know, yeah. So if there had been guidance about the shower, it would have been pick up the soap now, you know. Which I've never had guidance pick up the soap now. But you know what I mean. Like that type of guidance wasn't exactly in the moment guidance. It was a guidance that began a process. And in fact, the process did start immediately and unfolded over a period of, I think that guidance, if I remember correctly, came in February, but I could be wrong how memories are. I'd have to go look at my journal. But I think it came in February and it was June by the time I moved. So it began to unfold immediately. Same thing with when I received the guidance to move to Pueblo. That actually took a year and a half. And now we have the guidance about the retreat house. And that guidance came in, what year did that guidance come in? 2014. And that's still unfolding. You know, so there's occasionally this guidance that seems to move us into a particular direction. But that's rare. I mean, that type of guidance, my experience is extremely rare. The typically guidance is about right now, you know, like in the morning time, I go through this experience of contemplating NTI, contemplating something else that I'm contemplating that inspires me, meditating and writing a tip. And in my calendar, it's funny because if you look at my calendar, in order to save that 4 hours, I think I have it in my calendar that I'll spend 30 minutes contemplating whatever I'm reading now. I'll spend an hour and a half to 2 hours meditating. And then I'll spend an hour and a half contemplating NTI and writing a tip. But it doesn't happen that way. That does save the 4 hours. But it doesn't happen that way. You know, what really happens is each morning I get up and I feel what to do. Like I can just feel it, whether I'm going to NTI first, whether I'm going to meditate first, whether I'm going to contemplate whatever my current contemplation material is first. And I follow that feeling within those 4 hours. And I don't have a decision in my head about the way I'm going to do this. I let the inner guidance lead me. And, of course, I find that, you know, everything connects. Like if I do my contemplation and meditation first and then go to NTI, something within my own fulfillment that morning, my own contemplation and meditation time, comes out in my tip. Or if I write the tip for it first, and then I go to my contemplation, I find something from my tip informs and guides my contemplation of what I'm reading. You know, like it's a whole. But I don't know what order that whole needs to happen in order for me to have those continuing insights that I need each and every morning. That continuing deepening of desire that I continue to need. And so I let the inner guidance lead me, right? I set the 4 hours aside in a structured way, but I actually let the inner guidance lead me within the 4 hours. And that's what I've mentioned to you all before. When the time comes for me to close my eyes and go into meditation, holistic feel to it. Like, okay, it's time to meditate now. Close eyes, you know. It has a heart feel to it. Like by the time that morning experience brings me to my meditation and then says to meditate now, the feeling says to meditate now, whatever order that occurs in, when the time comes to close the eyes, I'm fully ready to close the eyes. I've been prepared. So the journal entry says, what do I see now as I look with the inner guru? I see the yellow brick road, one brick at a time. I know exactly where I need to place my foot now. Do I need to know anything else? No, just this. I only need to know where to place my foot now. And then I need to follow through by placing my foot there along with my heart. I'm going to move on to 808B. Before I read 808B, I'm going to read the quote again. The great inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal, and he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. But again, you must have the strong desire to find him and do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. And don't waste energy and time on regrets. Learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. All right, so let's look at 808B. Can the yellow brick road be hard to find? Yes, if I forget where to look for it. If I forget to look within, I let go of my teacher's hand. I become lost in the woods, lost in an abundance of thoughts and confusion. If this happens, it need not be for long. Perfect guidance is always here waiting for my attention to come within and light it up again. So, what I'm attempting to do right now is to remember a time when I forgot to look within for guidance. And the only time that's coming to mind, as funny as this is in the first year when Awakening Together was being built. It seems like in that first year, maybe even the first year and a half, it's like, here was my experience. It was like my old business personality that I had kind of left behind when I left my job in Boston and moved to North Carolina. It was like that business personality was never actually healed. It just became dormant because it wasn't needed, right? I wasn't doing business anymore, so it wasn't needed in North Carolina. It wasn't needed my first 2.5 years living here in Pueblo. And not until I got into Awakening Together and I had to start writing policies and that kind of thing and working with a team of people again and all that kind of stuff that was more like my old business life, that this part of my personality, which actually hadn't been healed, it had just been dormant, unused, came back out again. And when it came back out again, what I accidentally did was I fell back on my business experience, my business skills to guide me. And I experienced a conflict within during that time. It's like the peace that I had come to through my purification and my practices before kind of got lost because this unpurified, still very much alive part of my personality arose and was trusted. And so that the feelings of, you know, workplace stress returned. And when I saw this, I realized what had happened. In fact, I remember telling Jacqueline that maybe, and of course this isn't true now, I see it's not true, but I told her that maybe the only reason for Awakening Together was to bring that business personality again so that I could purify it. I said, you know, I haven't had to write policies. I haven't had to work with teams. I haven't had to do any of this stuff, and I can just feel it. I can just feel all the angst, you know. And so once I had that realization, then I began to practice tuning in to inner guidance in what felt like a more business lifestyle. And I actually found that even though I had learned to turn to inner guidance in, you could call it my morning contemplation time, and I had learned to turn to guidance in, you know, kind of an everyday householder's life, I hadn't learned to turn to inner guidance in a business environment. And in a way, it was like starting all over again. But I feel that it finally came to be. I feel like I follow inner guidance in my work with Awakening Together now, just like I do follow inner guidance in my morning contemplation time and in my daily life. Jay says he feels like he's doing that work in his business life right now too. So, you know, the journal entry says, can the yellow brick road be hard to find? The answer is yes if I forget where to look for it. If I think that my wisdom comes from my life experience, my previous education, you know, you know, whatever. If I think that it comes, if I think that my wisdom comes from something other than intuition, spiritual intuition, intuition in the moment, then I can lose the yellow brick road. Lose the path, lose the way. So it's really important to learn that there are no differences. It's not like my morning contemplation time is different than my business life. And that I, you know, follow one set of rules in my morning contemplation time, which is pay attention to within, and another set of rules in my business time, which is pay attention to my experience and my judgments and my opinions. Right? It doesn't work that way. In fact, the real lesson is to learn to listen within in everything. That's the real lesson. Because when you're listening within to that intuition, you are abandoning the false self. I'll tell you one of the lies about inner guidance that I have heard many people speak over the years. One of the lies about inner guidance is that, here's the way it sometimes gets spoken. There's no difference between me and God, and so, you know, inner guidance is basically going to be whatever I want. That's the lie. Inner guidance isn't here to uphold the false personality. Inner guidance is here to it does a number of things in my experience. It's here to reveal that the false personality is false, but sometimes before, you know, we're ready for that revelation, it even, you know, it tears down the false personality. I mean, like you would tear down a building. I don't mean tear down like say, oh, you know, you're a loser. It never does that. But it tears it down. Like when I was with Laurent, you know, his value system and my value system was completely different. And of course I thought I was right. Just like he thought he was right. You know, my values were the right ones. His were the screwed up ones. Of course, his feeling was exactly the opposite. His values were the right ones and mine were the screwed up ones, right? So my inner guidance. Yeah, it's the butter. My inner guidance never told me that I was right. My guidance never said, you're right, Gina. Inexpensive butter is better than expensive butter. Never. What my guidance would basically say is, here's another opportunity to die. Die. Keep dying. Die. Do you know, I don't know if I've told this story to Jacqueline recently, but I don't remember how much I've talked about this publicly. Do you know that several months into my relationship with Laurent, and remember, Laurent was, he had no money of his own. He was spending my money. I was living off of my savings. I was not receiving any donations at that time, so I had zero income. My savings, I'd been living on it for a couple of years by then, so it was getting very, very low. And Laurent came in and began spending my money on expensive butter, expensive water, which he boiled anyway, massages, that he didn't, you know, of course, well, what is it when they stick you with the acupuncture? You know, just taking trips to California to see his cousin, my money that I was running out of and had no income. You guys can imagine what this was like for me. I was a very frugal person trying to make that money last as long as possible. Can you guys imagine this situation? Can you feel it? My guidance did not say that I was right. This is the truth. My guidance said, give him the checkbook. Let him manage the money. Do not look to see what's going on. That's what I mean by tearing down the personality. That was like ripping my guts out. And of course, I could have said no. And in fact, I think most people would have. But I said yes. And this is why I healed to the point that I have. Because I allowed inner guidance to tear apart my false personality. I didn't try to cling to it. And the funny story is the end of the story, which of course was many months later. Many months later, when it came time for Laurent and I to split, of course he gave the checkbook back to me because it was actually, you know, that means I had to have put his name on the account, didn't I? Yeah, I just had a thought of that. If he was writing the check, his name was even on my account. But in the end, he had to give the checkbook back to me because, you know, we both knew that it was really, you know, quote, my money, not his money. And so he gave the checkbook back to me and he left. And I opened it up and it was a mess because he had never managed a checkbook before. He had been raised in a way that he had credit cards and he could put things on his credit cards and his dad paid the bill up until the credit cards were taken away. His dad took the credit cards away when he moved in with me. But he had never really had to manage money before, so he didn't really know how to do it. And what would happen, you know, is when he would write a check for groceries or whatever, he wouldn't always remember to go in and subtract it from the register. And then later at some point he would, I didn't subtract that, but he wouldn't remember how much he wrote the check for. So he would estimate, he would guess. But what he did is he always guessed, over. So let's say he spent $125, he might guess $150. And so when I finally got the checkbook and I went through it and I balanced it, there was $3,000 more in there than it looked like when he gave it to me. So it was like having found $3,000. It's a funny story about how it ended. You know, I not only let go of all of my desires to control, all of my fear about money, you know, all of that. I not only got to let go of all of that, but it felt like I ended up with a bonus $3,000. But this idea that the inner guidance is going to support what your ego wants is just bullcrap. The ego will support what your ego wants, and it will be happy to pretend like it's your inner guidance if that's, you know, the game you want to play. That's why I said you have to be sincere about wanting to abandon or lose or let go of the false self. That's the only way to know genuine inner guidance. That desire to no longer see yourself as the false self, the desire to know truth, but really, you know, that desire to let go of the ego, really, is necessary, is absolutely necessary in order to get in touch with genuine inner guidance. So, this says, can the yellow brick road be hard to find? Yes, if I forget where to look for it. If I forget to look within, I let go of my teacher's hand. I become lost in the woods, lost in an abundance of thoughts and confusion. If this happens, it need not be for long. Like as soon as you feel that you've lost it, you can feel it. If you've been following inner guidance and living by inner guidance, and then something changes in your life and an old part of your personality takes over, like my business personality did, you'll feel it, right? The tension returns, the stress returns, the anxiety returns. You feel it. And that's how you know that you've slipped back into some old conditioning. And so the moment you feel it, you just make the decision to start seeking within again. If I forget to look within, I let go of my teacher's hands. I become lost in the woods, lost in an abundance of thoughts and confusion. If this happens, it need not be for long. Perfect guidance is always here, waiting for my attention to come within and light it up again, right? It's my attention that lights up the guidance. It needs my attention in order for me to hear it, right? I have to want to hear it in order for me to hear it. Okay, I'm going to go to 808C. Again, the quote is, "The greatest guru is your inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal. And he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. But again, you must have the strong desire to find him and do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. You see, if I had said, no, I'm keeping the checkbook, that would have created an obstacle and delay, right? You must have the strong desire to find him and do nothing that will create obstacles and delays. And do not waste energy and time on regrets. If you learn that you did do that, say, oh, you know, I kept the checkbook, right? I kept the checkbook I shouldn't have. Okay, well, don't waste energy and time on regrets. Just learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. The next time that feeling of guidance comes again, follow it. Learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. All right. So here's 808C. There are many suggestions about how to awaken. To listen to them all can be like standing at an intersection with the yellow brick road going in all directions. Do you remember that scene from Wizard of Oz where there's this one place where Dorothy and Toto come and the yellow brick road goes in four directions and she asks the Scarecrow which way and he kind of points two ways and then she asks him again and he points two different ways, right? So that's the intersection we're talking about here. There are many suggestions about how to awaken. To listen to them all can be like standing at an intersection with the yellow brick road going in all directions. How does one choose when there are so many ways to go? Easy. Listen within and follow the way you feel to go. True, others may go another way. True, there may be a crowd clamoring that their way is the only way or the right way. Close your eyes and be still. Forget what is seen and heard out there. Jesus said the road to the kingdom is narrow. Maybe you do appear to walk alone. Or only with a few scattered travelers. That matters not. Listen within and trust its guidance. It knows your way. It is your constant companion as surely as the sun is the constant companion of the light of day. So this is what's important. This is what's important about inner guidance. I'm laughing at Jay's comment. I know you are a woman, but that took balls. Actually, what that took was this desire I'm talking about to be stripped of the false personality. Right? That's what it took. Really, really, really wanting it. No matter what. Above all else, that's what it took. So right this moment, I don't feel alone on my spiritual path. Right this moment, I feel that there are many of you in step with me. I feel like we're doing this together. But I haven't felt that way always, and I may not feel that way always. More times than not, I have felt that, and please pardon what I'm about to say, but maybe you felt it too and you won't take personal offense. More times than not, I felt like everybody around me wasn't doing it, wasn't sincere, and that I had to do it all by myself or not do it at all. You know, like everybody else around me was kind of, you know, half interested in spirituality like a hobby, but really still very, very interested in their lives and very, very interested in everything that was going on with their work, with their family, and you know, just everywhere. In the news, in entertainment, you know. And I felt like I was the only one who really wanted this. And so the point is, if that's true, then so be it. Then do it alone. You hear a cricket chirping with me? Buddha did it alone. Ramana did it alone. Although Jesus had followers and people around him, most of them at least seemed not to have any clarity at all, so he may have felt that he did it alone. You have to be willing to do it alone. If you aren't willing to do it alone, then truth be told, you aren't willing to do it. If you need all of your friends and your family to come along with you to cheer you on and keep telling you how right you are in the way that you're thinking, it's just a journey through thought, to quote Michael Langford. It's a thought system. In fact, I suspect that no one has ever gone through the eye of the needle except alone. So it's something you have to be willing to do alone. So the journal entry again says, there are many suggestions about how to awaken. To listen to them all can be like standing at an intersection with the yellow brick road going in all directions. How does one choose when there are so many ways to go? Easy. Listen within and follow the way you feel to go. True, others may go another way. True, there may be a crowd clamoring that their way is the only way or the right way. Close your eyes and be still. Forget what is seen and heard out there. Jesus said the road to the kingdom is narrow. Maybe you do appear to walk alone or only with a few scattered travelers. That matters not. Listen within and trust its guidance. It knows your way. It is your constant companion as surely as the sun is the constant companion of the light of day. And 808D is a song. It's a lyrics from a song. This is a song that I first listened to when I was 17 years old. Certainly in no way saw myself on a spiritual path. In fact, back then, my favorite thing to do was called psilocybin mushrooms. But when I heard this song, I had my first spiritual realization. It was years and years and years before my second one came, many years. But my first one came with these lyrics right here. The key to peace is sitting on your shoulders. So knock upon the door and you walk on in. You're just a child who has but to remember that in yourself you just found your best friend. That's from The Legend of Crazy Horse by J.D. Blackfoot. And what I realized then, and although I never would have known the term ego, I never would have known the term false self, I never could have explained to anyone else the realization that I had. I mean, it doesn't even make sense that I could have had this realization with the lack of education, spiritual education that I had at the time. But I knew there was a truth. And I knew that there was a guidance system within. And that when I was ready, it would lead me there. All right, releasing the mic. Bye.